Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone, Sakuya here, and I'm actually not joined by Gabby. For those of you who are watching this on YouTube right now, I'm actually joined by Anamarchy, which, wait, that's how I would say it, right? Anamarchy?
Anamarchy, like, yes.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself here for those who have not encountered you here before?
Hi, I'm Anamarchy History. I do gaming reactions to historical games. I do history videos, long-form documentaries, which is probably one I'm more famous for. And I also cover current military conflicts. I'm a military historian. That's what I focus on. I do Ukraine and it looks like maybe Venezuela at the moment.
Oh, yeah. No, you have no idea. The next video that I'm working on here for geopolitics is specifically what's going on between Guyana and Venezuela. Are you doing the same thing?
Well, I thought about it, looking at a breakdown of the current military capability of Venezuela. But then I keep thinking, I need to have a chat with my mate Perrin about it because he might be doing one of his epic slideshows. So I don't want to step on his toes. So I'll have to check if he's doing it.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I'm sort of interested as to what the play is because, you know, the Venezuelan Air Force and its like clapped out crew of like 20 F-16As from the 1970s, how they're going to match up against the mighty Swedish Gripen from Brazil. That'd be interesting to watch.
I'd say that it would be probably packed particles of a new variant of Pervitin. It's called cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just get it across the border. They'll just get it across the border from Colombia and, you know, they'll utilize that. Who needs
that's
brakes?
How you win.
Yeah. Who needs brakes when, you know, you got the power of trucks to fuel your jet pilots?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was looking at a map of Venezuela and Guyana, the disputed area, the other day. There's literally no logistical infrastructure there. So if I was going to launch a land invasion as Venezuela, powering my troops through Colombian Bam Bam is probably the way to go. That is probably how I'm going to do it.
Thing is, there's not going to be a massing of the troops here when they're looking at it. Like, I know this is a little bit of, I guess, a spoiler going into all this for people who are probably going to be looking at the video that's going to end up being made on this. But the entire thing, like across the entirety of the border, it's just straight like Amazon. That's all that it is, right? It's
straight Amazon.
And so the issue is, yes, as you said, there's no infrastructure. So what they're going to end up doing is it's going to be a thing of, I'm pretty sure, setting up like settlements and other things. You know, it's going to be an action almost like China trying to go and create artificial islands, but claiming the territory of, you know, just pushing people into it as settlers to actually reclaim that part just so that they can then send their Navy around to claim the actual valuable territory that they immediately want, which is going to be the rich offshore oil resources.
Yeah, because that's what they really want. Well, look, if you had told me that a real life, the real life version of Mercenaries 2 from the Xbox 360 was going to happen, I would not have believed you. I would not have believed you, but we might get a live action adaption of Mercenaries 2, guys. It'll be great.
Everything in recent history is just making me think of like Metal Gear Solid as it just advances. But like war has changed. It's ID tag soldiers with ID tag weapons, and then with like private military corporations fighting one another. It's just. I don't even know how I'm going to look back on this in like 10, 15 years.
I just love the fact that Henry Kissinger dies and South America explodes. It's like the universe is just like, right, now is the time.
He can't stop us now. His spirit won't be able to do anything.
The Monroe Doctrine intensifies. Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be great. My veteran friends are like, oh, finally, we get to invade a tropical country. Let's go. It's been desert for the past 30 years.
It's still going to be hot as hell. The difference is this one is wet instead of dry. Anamarchy, you said that your specialty primarily deals with, it's World War II and in general military history, you said, right?
Yeah, military history. It's what I went to the big fancy school for to get no money for. So yeah, there you go.
Say no money? You're doing this now, you know? And what's more lucrative than being a YouTuber and dedicating hours upon hours upon hours for a risky chance of something perhaps possibly doing well on the fickle internet?
I should have gone into STEM with my crap math scores aside and just done that instead. But it's the old stereotype. It's funny. I was in a class of like so many budding historians, and I'm the only one of us actually doing history for a living. Everyone else is like teaching or an administrative job. It is what it is.
No, I totally understand that. For anyone who has not heard of anything that I've done, because I know I've made shorts and talked about it in the past for what it is that I did. Immediately after graduating college, you know what I did? I worked as a beer distributor, like a beer merchandiser. So it was my job to get off trucks and load beer in grocery stores, like to deliver them inside. That's what I did with my degree. And then immediately after that, I got fired because once winter rolled around, there was no need for it because beer sales dropped. So I got fired. I then got a job as an internet salesman, like a call-in internet salesman from a call center. And then when I left that job voluntarily to go to another one that was logistics for TQL, Total Quality Logistics, which I'm never going to recommend that job to anyone, by the way, it's total shit. But either way, I did that. And then I started up a business from that was selling or transporting used and recycled goods. Do you know who the number one purchaser of used and recycled goods in the world is?
Actually, no.
It's China. Do you know what happened with the United States and China in 2019?
Yeah, things went a little bit squiffy because of the Rona and old Mater, the man who must not be named with all those tariff laws and God knows what else.
Yeah, the trade war completely destroyed any aspect of this little budding business that I had started with the company. So I got fired from that. And then I went to work for a laboratory. I worked in a laboratory and I started 2 months or 3 months prior to COVID. And then everything went to shit. So I got hired at a medical laboratory literally 3 months before a global pandemic broke out.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I can relate to that because same thing with me. I got like 99% through my degree. I was like almost there. Then my dad gets laid off and I'm like, well, okay, I have to go get a job now. So I ended up selling mobile phones, repairing mobile phones, doing that sort of thing. Became a technician, started selling mobile phones, was one of the top sales reps in the country for my business.
Damn.
But I got fired. Why? Because I was also the shop steward for the union.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was causing a bit of a ruckus because I saved a bunch of employees' jobs who they really wanted to get rid of because I would sit in on their meetings and negotiate for them. And yeah, so they started auditing literally every one of my phone calls to find like one tiny little mistake I made and then got rid of me.
Use it as an infraction to get rid of you. God damn, that's stupid.
Yep.
Well, then speaking of stupid things, what I figured might be a fun thing to talk about then today is to go into dumb military events and stories. Because I figured that, you know, with your knowledge of military history, there is nothing that perhaps is more wasteful and stupid in this world sometimes than a war. Because
it is the single dumbest thing humanity does. The way I describe war, it is the ultimate expression of humanity. And when people get really upset when I say that, but the way I sort of describe it is war is the only place where you find the absolute best traits of humanity, like bravery, honor, self-sacrifice, and the absolute worst, genocide, mass murder.
You have no, that is quite literally almost the exact same as what I have been telling people for literally years. I am on record here from all my varying classes and people. This used to piss people off because I went to like a small liberal arts college. And so
yeah,
I still remember telling people in this Oh, yeah, no. Like, you see the, like, the war was the greatest point of humanity. And because in during war, you will see the best and the worst. You will see the most developments. You will see the most developments from military technology, from infrastructure, from societal developments, from literally every single aspect that happens during a conflict where the rate of growth of humanity skyrockets, but then it's like treading a fine line because it can easily destroy itself at the same time. It is, you see the worst.
And you want to know what's really annoying about it? Military historians in general, and we cop a lot of shit. And the reason we do is because we have that focus and that love for that very sort of, like, humanity pushing the limits. And, like, it's kind of, it sounds really horrible, but it is kind of like the sports effect in a very similar way, where it is the ultimate competition. Like, human beings are competing with one another with their very lives, like their civilization online.
They right? are.
So it's the ultimate expression of what humanity is capable of for good or evil, depending on the circumstances, right? You try and explain that, and then you will get, if you went to a liberal arts college, you'll get this. The sociology and cultural historians will come along and be like, and they'll be like, oh, you filthy guys, you like these barbaric men smashing each other with swords. You're inferior to my study of, transformative liberal arts in the 17th century. It's so much more interesting. You're just a peasant who likes wars and such.
Or you get called a fascist.
I don't want to bring politics on this podcast, but it's just like, you have no idea how tough it is being a left-wing military historian. It's really hard. It is really hard. Because on the one hand, you'll be like, I'll try to talk to my friends and people who are aligned politically with me. I mean, I've got the JCP flag behind me. Right? I'll try and talk to them and they'll be like, oh yeah, but literally all the people you study and research are like evil monsters, right? And I'm like,
you mean humanity? Yeah. Welcome to history. Yeah. The amount of times you have no idea how many times across varying different things for platforms, no one has a bead on what I am politically, and that's going to stay that way. I have made it a point of pride that even though I cover stuff for like geopolitics, I will never actually tell anyone what it is that I believe politically in any situation. Like, I will make fun of communism, I'll make fun of fascism, I'll make fun of all the varying different ideologies of any kind of extremity, but I will never tell people what it is that I actually think on anything, because it is not my place to tell people what they should think. I can only tell people about the stupid stories of what people have done in the past that has ruined shit.
You're smart, because I just fight people on Twitter.
So, speaking of the stupid things, do you have a particular favorite dumb event? Like, is there one that you know off the top of your head of just something that has, like, happened with military history? Because I got several that I know that have happened, whether it's involving a vehicle, some kind of stupid invention, or some kind of action that was really dumb.
Okay. So I'm going to cheat a little bit because I have a magnum opus project, as they say, running that I've been writing for, like, four or five months now. It's actually no longer than that, 6 months. It was something I referenced. There's a bit of a story behind this, and it's become a bit of a meme in my community because I've been saying I'll do it, and I haven't done it yet, and people are whinging about it.
Hey everyone, Sakuya here, and before we get back to the show, I would just like to thank today's sponsor, eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure that your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. will speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
So there is the Russian fighter jet, the Su-57.
Yes.
I'm sure we're aware of that. Now, Alex Hollings, who's a great creator on TikTok and other on YouTube here as well, he does Air Power and the Air Power podcast. He's really cool. He's talked at length about the Su-57, as have a bunch of other people. But I wanted to do one of my customary massive deep dives on it.
Mm-hmm.
Problem was, I was like, okay, but as with everything in military history, despite all the crap we got for it, to understand military history, you have to understand everything else about society.
Correct.
And to do that, I had to explain how the Soviet aviation industry got into such a bad state that it transferred over to the Russian one, which is why the Su-57 is such a piece of crap.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's terrible. Like, the F-22 would eat this thing. Like, completely eat this thing, despite what they say.
Oh, yeah.
And you're already, and now that I've said that, and because I'm here, you're now going to get a bunch of angry Russian fanboys in the comments. So I talk about this, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to explain this. So I started writing a script, but I realized to explain why I had to talk about the history of the Soviet aviation industry, which meant I had to go all the way back and start with the start of the Soviet aviation industry and the problems with the structure of Soviet aviation design and development, which meant I had to talk about the origins of, communist Russia and all that sort of thing. And eventually, my, 10,000-word breakdown of the Su-57 turned into 14 pages of Soviet aviation history, and I haven't even finished the World War II segment, right? And so I'm like, okay, yep. It's going to have to be three videos. So let's talk about the absolutely monstrous story that not many people heard of, because you hear a lot about the Su-57, you hear a lot about the MiG-25.
Yes.
Must did a video on that. The MiG-25 was a bit funny, which resulted in the F-15. But there is a better story. So I am going to tell you the grand and wonderful story of the Silvansky IS.
Oh, boy.
Now, the IS stands for Yosif Vissarionovich Stalin, as we know, because if you want to get in the good books and you're in Soviet Russia in the 1930s, you got to name everything after the big man. All right? Now, basically, you have three major design bureaus in the Russian aviation industry at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You have Tupolev, you have Ilyushin, and you have Polikarpov, right? Three big ones. You also have a couple of up-and-comers. You have Lavochkin, you have Yakovlev, and you have Artyom Mikoyan. Artyom Mikoyan and Antony Garevich would form this little company called MIG. You might have heard them. They'll show up somewhere. You also have Sukhoi. He's kicking about somewhere working for Tupolev, I think, at this time. Anyway, you've got all this core of designers. Into this arena steps a man, a legend, a god of aviation design, a fresh graduate from the Tamansky Aviation School, right? He is a legend, a man without comparison. He is Mr. Silvansky. All right?
All right.
Now, Mr. Silvansky is a very, very interesting guy. I have to get his full name.
Yeah.
Alexander Silvansky. Now, he had graduated from the Moscow Aviation Industry Institute and Tamansky Engines, right? That's who he comes from. He graduates from there, but here's the thing. He's married to the daughter of the Defense Appropriations Minister Kaganovich, right? And like with everything in the Soviet Union, you've got two ways of doing things. You'll either get appointed by the government after winning a government contract, or, as they say in the business, you know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, right?
Yep.
And he knows Kaganovich. So he goes to Kaganovich and he's like, buddy, my guy, listen, I'm the greatest aviation designer to come out of this school, and I'm going to build something incredible. So Kaganov is just like, hey, boss, this guy, he's great. He's my son-in-law. He's awesome. Hire him. So they do. And they create the Silvansky Design Bureau. Now, problem It doesn't exist. Silvansky Design Bureau doesn't exist. There's no staff. There's no factory. Nothing.
It's just a name on paper that represents him. That's it.
Yes, literally that. So he uses his father-in-law's influence to get himself a factory. Brilliant. Fine. We've got a place to build this thing. Problem. I now have to go and get engineers to build this thing. So he tries to get engineers. Problem. It's not a capitalist system because, funnily enough, having a market where you can compete and get things, like where people run things themselves, is really good at getting engineers going. What does the Soviet Union not have? So there's only a bureaucracy there. And so what he needs to do, he can't go exactly up. He can't go to Polikarpov or Yakovlev or anyone and go like, hey, bro, you want to close down your institute and come work for me instead? He can't do that.
No.
And he can't cherry pick their engineers. So he's only got one option. He finds the engineers from the design bureaus that have already failed because they haven't worked. And he has to go cherry pick their engineers. So he goes around all the failed design bureaus in the Soviet Union and assembles a crack team of legends who have been fired from all the other design bureaus. And he's like, boys, we're going to build this plane. So they get the AM-82 radial, which is the... Soviet designations are weird.
That's fine.
It's basically a Wright Cyclone engine that's built under license. M82, the M82 Shestakov, mm-hmm. M82. Anyway, early model, still in the early teething stages. They haven't developed it into the one that would go into the LA-5. Anyway, for you aviation nerds out there, I got you. Anyway, they got this radial engine, and they're like, okay, we're going to need to build a shell around it. The problem is they haven't got any aviation experience properly. They've only got this guy who's basically got the bachelor's degree equivalent of aviation design. He's not even like, he hasn't got a master's. He hasn't got a PhD. He hasn't got any practical experience in a factory. He's just set this up. So he sets up this design bureau, gets all the rejected engineers from everywhere else but he couldn't find anything, uses his father-in-law's influence to get him the funding, calls this thing the Iosif Stalin, and then gets to building it around this engine. Problem. Soviet industry is Soviet industry. So there's a backlog on the engine, so they have to get the earlier model, the one that's not designed.
Yep, because everything is part of the command economy. It has to be. It's specifically, unless you know another guy within the production line that can get something further ahead, you're stuck behind that massive backlog. So yeah, it's, yeah, you know, the set price, whatever, but years behind.
Yep, exactly. And because of the Great Purge and charges of wrecking, which is just starting to kick off at this time, everyone's producing older models of stuff that they can make more of to meet their quotas. So the research and development and actual production of the engine they need for this thing is behind schedule. So they have a less powerful engine. Problem is, this engine is a big radial based on the Wright Cyclone. Also has a very large reduction gear, which means it needs a large propeller. It's got a lot of torque. There's a bunch of technical engineering details, which I won't bore you guys with. But point is, he has to build this thing, and it looks like a giant I-16. I'll see if I can find a photo for you. I'll drop it in the chat that you put in at this point. But this thing, like, the only way they can get it to work is basically to build a massive variant of the I-16. For those of you who have played War Thunder, you
see, the I-16 was thinking it had a massive chonky front to it. I think I remember this.
Yeah, it had a massive chonky front to it. So all because of the way he set this up.
I remember this thing. I remember this thing because in Hearts of Iron 4, this is one of the base planes that you have at the very beginning of the game. Like, I remember this, the I-16. Yep.
So this is the Silvansky IS. It's very similar to an I-16, just with a enclosed cockpit bolted to it. And because, as you can see, the proportions of this aircraft, the aerodynamics of it, he's got this massive wing. He's got this really short, stubby fuselage, this massive tail and empennage section, and he's got this massive engine cowling. So this thing has the aerodynamics of a brick. Okay? It's got an underpowered radial. They don't have the radial they actually need. And it's got the aerodynamics of a brick. So it's like, okay, no issue. We need this thing to outperform the I-16, though, otherwise there's no point to building it. So it needs to have the same armament. So it's got two Shakast machine guns and two Shvac 20mm cannons. Okay, we need all the ammo for this and more ammo than the I-16. Okay. And then they've got a design team, which is scraped together from all the people who got kicked out of all the other design teams. So when they actually build this thing, The measurements are in two different sets, and the building construction and everything is off the numbers.
Wait, what do you mean that the measurements are in two different sets?
Some of it was in metric, some of it was imperial.
Why? It's the Soviet system. They shouldn't have been...
Exactly. There's a bunch of different shit going on because they're using foreign parts.
Most of the stuff was being imported already.
Yes. And so you've got all this different shit happening. And so eventually, when they built this thing, the wheelbase is too short. So the wheel legs are not long enough. And the actual where the gears lined up and all the measurements and jigs they've done, all it's built, the gear can't retract because they've made the gear legs too short. And at the same time, the wheelbase and the wheel wells where the wheels sit up into are too wide. And so what's happened is you can't retract the gear because the gear gets stuck up against the fuselage. So the gear is sort of like hanging in like a V formation. Like imagine the gear is only retracted 45 degrees because it can't get in. But because the wheel legs are too short and because they've got that massive radial with the reduction gear, the prop is too big and the blades are too long.
Oh.
So the propeller is digging into the ground.
The propeller while the is gear digging can't into retract. The ground.
And so Sylvansky hasn't been watching any of this, by the way. He hasn't been doing any of this because he's not an aircraft designer. He's actually a politician masquerading as an aircraft designer. Mm-hmm. So he's been spending all his time in Moscow sucking up to the big cheese, sucking up to Stalin and his father-in-law like, hey guys, I'm building this great plane. It's going to be fucking amazing. It's going to be so cool. You guys should come to my factory and see it sometime. Hey, you know what? You want to invest in me? Give me a couple of those rubles down my way, bro. It's going to be sick. This is going to be great. And here's the point. They've done all this. And then the aircraft can't take off because the prop's too long. So what does he do? Sylvansky comes down from Moscow and he's like, hey, why isn't my plane flying? Bro, you fucked up the measurements. This thing's too long. He goes to the cabinet. He goes to the tool cabinet in the hangar workshop, gets a freaking saw and saws the end of the propeller blades off till it clears.
I mean, it's not going to smack the ground cracking it. At least. Yeah.
So you're not generating enough thrust now because you don't have a big enough propeller. It's not going to work properly. Plus, you've thrown the balance of the propeller off, so it's going to vibrate. Anyway, well, now we've got this far. It's an airplane. Needs to fly. So they get a test pilot in it. They taxi it out. It's vibrating, shaking everywhere. The props don't pick it up. It's all going. This thing is rattling around. Completely unstable. It's completely unsafe. They taxi it to the runway, and they go for a long takeoff run. They do not get anything like enough lift. What's happened? Because they've had to use the weaker model of engine, and because they've cut the propeller off and done all that crap, guess what? Not enough thrust, not enough lift. So, what do we do? Well, let's take all the ammo out. I mean, it's a fighter, but we don't need ammo. Like, why not? So they take half the fuel out, half the ammo out. They come back, and they're like, all right, it can get airborne now.
You just find a jockey, you know? Don't get a pilot. Just get a horse jockey, you know? Half the weight. Maybe they went through the Holodomor. I'm sure there's plenty of starving Ukrainians that you could throw into there now.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you don't need a pilot who's actually, you know, big enough to strong enough to control. I mean, nutritional standards in the Soviet Union in the 1930s are questionable at best. So, I mean, why not? So, they get this guy into the plane and he takes off. The moment he gets airborne, he pulls for the gear to retract.
Oh.
The gear gets 45 degrees and jams up against the wheel wells because they're not big enough and not placed correctly. And so now there's like 30 knots of drag from the landing gear just pushing up against it. There's no airflow. The landing gear is just causing all this drag. The propeller is not long enough and they've sawed it off. It's like bodged in. So it's vibrating everywhere.
It's you've essentially created at that point, considering how slow it is, they've created a less relaxing skyborne massage chair, it sounds like.
Yeah. 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 He's shaking around like, oh my God. You can see my double chin. It's giving the added effect. Just shaking around. And then he does one lap of the airfield. He lands. He gets the gear back down. He lands. The gear almost collapses because it's not set properly. And he freaking ground loops and skids across the airfield. The pilot gets out, walks over to Sylvansky, and he's like, I refuse to get back in that fucking thing. So they get another test pilot who tries to fly it, and he actually almost crashes and burns. And so his solution is, all right, well, fine. We'll get the proper engine.
Okay. So the proper engine is finally on the solution is to do the thing that was supposed to happen in the first place. Got it.
So they try fixing it. They put the new engine in. Problem is, they were forced to rechange their design to fit the old engine, the one that didn't work. So they've tried to fit the new one engine, and again, they fucked up the measurements and everything else, so they can't fit the new engine with the cowling and the aerodynamic shell and everything. So Silvansky gets out there himself, again, with a hammer, and just pounds the fairing into shape around the new engine. And they try again, and this thing has the same, it's a little bit faster, it can compensate, but the vibrations are now damn near impossible.
Hey,
the
thing is like wobbling. You can't up. Say at this point that he did not construct the aircraft, because it's certainly like the man took a hammer to metal. He constructed the aircraft one way or another.
They do another test flight. The guy lands. It still can't carry. It's still not powerful enough or fast enough to carry the ammo. And he just lands almost ground looping again. He very nearly dies in the landing because the landing gear almost collapses. He pulls up, gets out, and the test pilots unionize. In the Soviet Union under Stalin, the test pilots unionize, and they call it, and I quote, a bad heap of shit, and they fundamentally refuse to fly the aeroplane.
Do they have a quote here of that? Like, there is a documented record, yes, of them saying it is, yes, a bad piece of, yes, shit?
And you want to know what was better? After this happened, Silvansky was fired. How he didn't get gulagged and killed, I don't know. Silvansky was fired. Kaganovich was disgraced and got in the shit with Stalin for a bit. And the prototype, the surviving prototype, was actually taken to Moscow Aviation Institute, where he graduated from, and it was put there as a student example of how not to design an aircraft. Like, they went to his old alma mater. They went to his alma mater, stuck his plane there, and said, "You see, boys, this is how you don't build an airplane. This is a heap of shit."
Oh my god.
Yeah. This is the absolute
the only equivalent of anything, and I don't even have an actual example to bring that up. I haven't heard of someone doing to that precise degree before. I've heard people referencing things when it comes to, like, in the modern day and age with apps, you know, where there are apps that students have designed that end up being, like, you know, horrible failures or other things, or like scams or something else, get brought up within like tech schools or like, you know, some of those graphic design schools of like how not to do something. But I've never seen that happen with an aircraft.
With a full plane.
No.
Some of us love history. Others used to or never did, because history was presented as nothing but the rote memorization of names, dates, and facts. Basically, the story got left out, and that made history kind of suck. My name is Greg Jackson. I'm a university professor with a PhD in history, and bringing history to life is my passion. That's why I created my podcast, History That Doesn't Suck. I want to teach you everything you need to know about U.S. history, but I do so through stories. Let me tell you about George Washington begging his men not to mutiny against Congress, Clara Barton saving Union soldiers amid enemy fire, enslaved Frederick Douglass risking his life for liberty, and about so many other figures as their real experiences make industrialization, social movements, and even congressional debates and tax policy come to life. Subscribe to History That Doesn't Suck today, and join me, Professor Greg Jackson, every other week for a new episode, where I'd like to tell you a story.
What do you get when you take two childhood friends with a passion for unexplored history and a whole lot of booze?
You get the goofiest game in history, Queen's Podcast.
Hi, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Katie, and we're the host of Queen's Podcast.
Join us while we spill the tea on women from history.
We get into all kinds of stories here, like biographies of lesser known figures, for instance, Sayida Halkura, powerful pirate queen.
To the stories you might already know, like Marie Antoinette or Cleopatra, but with a fun twist.
Each queen is paired with a cocktail that'll totally get you in the mood to hear fun, juicy, and dramatic stories from history.
Because history is so much more than just dudes on a battlefield, and we believe that the female perspective and roles are just as deserving of their time in the spotlight.
Right. So come get to know these queens. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Cheers.
So I want to apologize to the viewers. I got it wrong. I got the engines mixed up. The AM82 Mikulin is for the IL2 and the MiG.
Oh, congratulations. This is going on YouTube. You're going to have corrections in there from the very beginning when this goes out.
I checked my script. And I'm like, you idiot. I mean, come on, guys. It's the morning. I'm like, time zones are a bitch. Time zones are a bitch. We have been trying to set this up for literal months.
Yeah.
And it's finally
the last
happened.
Time I communicated with you, I think it was June or July.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's December.
I mean, your trip to Japan was pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's the Japan trip. And then here's the funny thing. So I leave for Florida because I have family that lives in Florida. So I leave there in like a week and a half. A week after I get back from Florida, I'm going to Austria. I got some work that I'm going to be doing out there. Once I finish the whole thing with Austria, 6 weeks after that, and this one is not work that I'm going to be doing. I promised my daughter that when she turned 5 years old, because she's always been begging to go on the trips with us when we're doing these varying things for work. She's never been able to go. So I promised her that I would take her on a trip. We're going to take her to Disneyland Paris. So we're actually going to take her there for her birthday. So we're going to do that. But then after that, I got another business trip to Italy, and then I got another business trip that summer to Peru.
God damn, you're moving.
I know, right?
I'm moving. I fly for fun, and I don't fly that much. Good Lord. Yeah. That's rough. But that's the tale of the Sylvansky IS. That is one of the dumbest things.
That is way longer of an extended story than I normally anticipate, because I do dumb events in history all the time. In fact, that's my favorite part of history. I love conflict. I love military things. Of course I do. But my favorite things to study are dumb events in history and just how stupid shit can happen. Like, I've told this story before, for like, especially on shorts content, but I'm going to ask, have you heard of the Dublin Whiskey Fire?
No, actually.
Okay. So I'm going to get into a whole military thing, because I know that a lot of people who are tuning into this right now, it's going to be literally just dumb military events. And I have a whole Russian one here that I wanted to tell you about as well, which I'm sure you already have heard, because that seems to be a specialty that you're aware of. But in the case of the Dublin Whiskey Fire, right, back in the late 1800s, there was a whiskey distillery in Dublin, Ireland, that caught fire. And it was a terrible tragedy for the Irish, because 5,000 barrels of whiskey went up in flames and exploded. Because, of course, this is concentrated whiskey. I mean, that's an alcohol that's going to burn, right?
Oh, yeah. It'll burn.
So these pressurized kegs explode in a literal flaming river of alcohol that is flowing down through the streets of Dublin. And can you guess what happens?
Well, the Irish will try and drink it.
People lined up for over a mile to go and drink it with every kind of tin, every cup, hat, anything that could be used to store liquid. They did. Now, mind you, at the entire time that this point is happening, it is alcohol that is on fire. It is actually on fire as this is happening. And they're trying to stop it, because as it's flowing down through the streets, you know how those cobbled streets, how they rise up kind of in the middle and then they go down to the side for the divots that happens from carts. So it's flowing down through the side, but because of the way it's structured, there is no drains. That's not a thing. So it's not heading into a sewer. It's not going anything like that. It's just running down through the street. And so they try to stop it so that it doesn't go off onto the side in people's houses. And the first thing that they try to use there is manure, because they have large piles of manure everywhere. So they are scooping manure over onto the sides of the street to try and contain this literal flaming river of alcohol. So now it is a flaming river of alcohol and shit, which it doesn't stop. It continues to go even as people are trying to drink out of it, right? That is still happening. And so they finally end up stopping it, to agree with large amounts of sandbags and things that get piled up and poured, mixed with manure and everything. So it finally stops. And amazingly, that night, no one died in the fire.
Nobody died.
Yeah, people still died, but no one died in the fire. 13 people died of alcohol poisoning.
Oh, my God.
To this day is perhaps one of the most, if you're talking about a stereotypical, like when people make fun of like suffer stereotypes of Irishmen online, that is probably one of the greatest examples that you could use of precisely the stereotype that people would make fun of.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
The other one, I'm sure you're already aware of this. Do you remember the, like, cause you've covered stuff with MIG and everything, right?
Yes.
Remember in like the 1980s where a MIG fighter basically flew all across Europe on its own?
Yes. The pilot ejected and the aircraft, he thought he had a systems failure and he thought, oh, well, I better get out of my aircraft. He ejects. The aircraft just stays in level flight. It stays in level flight until it runs out of fuel and crashes into a house in Belgium.
Which does kill a teenager. Yeah. That does happen.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the Soviet government was like, oh, well, you better pay reparations for that. That pilot is like, I got out of aircraft. Aircraft was obviously still flying, comrade. It is still going. West now has our latest weapon. No, not they would have found much. The MiG-23 ML that they were flying was, well, East German pilots had to build entire strategies around the fact that it couldn't land. Yeah.
It's not they dug in position, you know, you're in the fucking sky.
Yeah. So the weird thing with the MiG-23 is it's got this issue where the final version, the MLD, I think it is, the latest and greatest model of the MiG-23 that they designed, they actually built a new flight control system, everything for it. They basically revamped the whole airframe from scratch and added an extra wing sweep position for the MiG-23 to improve its maneuverability. Because originally the thing's turning capability was absolutely garbage. And so East German pilots basically worked out a way to do kind of similar to what the Phantoms did in Vietnam, where they would have flights of two and they would sort of crisscross. So one group would commit, another group would commit. But yeah, the East German Air Force had designed an entire different group of like battle strategies for their MiGs because their MiGs couldn't tell.
Oh my God.
Which is...
It's not good for modern maneuverability.
No, which is why the F-15 is just such a devastating aircraft, especially after why they built it in response to the MiG-25 is just, the F-15 is just ridiculous.
The F-15 is almost, like, in my opinion, it's kind of like the initial case when the Zero, like the Japanese Zero, got first released onto the battlefield, and just the sheer degree of maneuverability. They had no armor whatsoever. So, I mean, if it got hit, it was dead. Trouble was trying to hit the damn thing in the first place because of how maneuverable it was. So you mix that with a fucking jet fighter and you basically got the F-15 with a hell of a lot more teeth on it.
Yeah, the F-15 has this wonderful capability of just raw power, excellent maneuverability. It's just the perfect sort of, it's dancing a knife edge, right? Because the F-16 is more maneuverable than the F-15 in most situations. Not all of them, but in most situations. But the F-15 has just so much grunt and so much, you know, weapons carriage capability, as well as the better, bigger radar, more space for stuff. Like, the E model is absolutely ridiculous. So, there's just so much you can do with the F-15. The only problem is the F-15 also comes with the price tag. At the time, it was...
Listen, American military equipment and price tags are things that usually, like in the case of a lot of history, ends up being a lot higher than you anticipate.
Yeah, look, there was a great quote I saw actually today. I was reading through aviation history and sort of, because there was recently an accident with a V-22 Osprey that crashed in Japan earlier today, the tilt rotor helicopter. They were talking about safety in aviation and mishaps in the US Navy. And there was a quote from a Tomcat maintainer, an F-14 maintainer, who said if safety was the Navy's priority, we would lock all our Tomcats in a hangar and lock them all. Variable geometry wing aircraft are an absolute nightmare to maintain. Australia operated F-111s for
logistically
years,
the whole thing, the amount of complexity that goes into one of those in comparison to like a standard fixed wing aircraft is astronomical.
That's the thing. Well, we talk about, this is what I talk about with Russia's current ongoing air campaign in Eastern Europe. Can't use the actual word because YouTube is mean. But Russia's ongoing air campaign in Eastern Europe, I look at the readiness rate for the US Air Force, and the US Air Force's B-1, the bone, as it were, had at one point, I think in the middle of the global war on terror, I think 2011, had like a readiness rate across the force of about 40%. And that's the US Air Force with that kind of budget. And the Russian bomber fleet right now with their modern ones, not the Tu-95s, but the Tu-22 backfires and the Tu-160s, if the US Air Force struggles with maintenance rates on swing wing aircraft, I don't even want to know the issues that the Russians are having. I don't want to know what their force readiness is.
Oh my God, no.
I mean, we know that. Well, speaking of MiG-25s, the biggest crux for them is their engines, because the engines are incredible, but they burn out really fast because they've just got so much raw power. And three or four, I think, MiG-31s have crashed in the Russian Air Force due to engine fires, engine malfunctions. Because of the air defense network that's going on in the conflict at the moment, they're just having to use the MiG-31 because it's got the Russian equivalent of the American Phoenix missile, right? Because the air defense is set up so well, they can't actually go into the enemy's airspace. So they have to stand off far away. And the only fighter that has missiles big enough and powerful enough to actually hit enemy aircraft are the ones on their MiG-31s. And so they've been pushing their airframes to the limit.
No, I get it.
And that's the big issue. And that's the big issue with maintaining modern air forces, is just the amount of wear and tear on engines and airframes is really, really bad, which is why the Russian Air Force has always, or Soviet Air Force and the Russian Air Force has always struggled in terms of like keeping a large number of, when the Soviet Union existed, they had that critical mass of raw economic power that they could draw on.
Not to mention that even as everything was being constantly developed, as soon as something started to kind of become a little bit outdated, well, I say that a lot of stuff ended up being outdated anyway, but they had a larger degree of sales capable things that were ready so that they could immediately then sell it. And at that time, India was an up and coming power. I say up and coming. It was industrializing rapidly, and its number one purchaser of arms, like where it got all of its equipment from, was the Soviet Union, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anything that they produced that they weren't going to use ended up either going to China. It ended up going into like Southeast Asia, like typically to India, but of course you had Cambodia, Laos, and others, or it went down into the Balkans. And like, they always had someone to buy the shit now.
Yeah. And ever since recent events took place in 2022, the market for US arms and even surprisingly European arms, like stuff from Sweden, France, and so forth, has skyrocketed, and Russian export capability has declined significantly.
Yeah, because they can't export. It has to be used.
Has to be used, and even if it was, no one wants to buy it. The Chinese are starting to buy in-house now. And that's what's interesting. The SU-57 was supposed to have a partnership with India. And when India actually saw the designs for it, they pulled out of the project. They're like, this thing's a heap of shit. We don't want anything to do with this. We'll build our own. Thank you very much.
Oh my God. And that sounds like its own dumb event of everything that is happening.
Yeah, the Indian Air Force is developing its own fifth generation fighter now because they took a look at the SU-57 and went, nah, this thing's a heap of shit. I don't want anything to do with it. They pulled out of the project. They just left. Like, the stealth's not going to work. The engines are from the SU-35.
Correct me if I'm wrong in here. The reason the stealth doesn't even work is because they didn't put in like the proper panels, if I recall correctly. Was that it? Because it's like the panels don't fit the frame of it properly to where it can't. It's, even though it's a stealth fighter, it's not really stealth capable.
Okay, so the US Air Force has reclassified it. It was originally going to be called stealth or low observable, right? They've since reclassified it, I think, to reduced signature, which is like the step below stealth. Yep. The US Air Force does not consider the SU-57 stealth anymore. Because my only conclusion with that is, because of the events in Eastern Europe, they had AWACS flying close to the border, and the Russians have probably done a field test of it, and NATO has gotten a good look at it. And they saw it, which tells me really all I need to know, to be honest.
Fair enough.
With you. The biggest issue they have is the Sukhoi Bureau actually did like a... Have you ever watched any of Russia's combat-approved
footage? Yeah, for stuff that they put out there? Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff.
Yeah, they're like, this is the most advanced fighter aircraft in the world. Combat approved announcer, English announcer, has their own fan club on non-credible defense
it
on Reddit.
It sounds as though it is an ad out of what you, if you turned on the TV on like GTA 5, it sounds like that with the overly bombastic, very clearly fake, but it's totally saying it's real. Just presentation.
Yeah. You know what it sounds like? It's Epic Trailers or whatever, the guys who do like the parody trailers for like games, and so it's like, in a world. Yeah, it's like, in a world where we actually have a functioning Air Force.
Throughout history, royals across the world were notorious for incest. They married their own relatives in order to consolidate power and keep their blood blue. But they were oblivious to the havoc all this inbreeding was having on the health of their offspring. From Egyptian pharaohs marrying their own sisters to the Habsburgs' notoriously oversized lower jaws. I explore the most shocking incestuous relationships and tragically inbred individuals in royal history. And that's just episode one. On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. I'm Lindsay Holiday, and I'm spilling the tea on history. Join me every Tuesday for new episodes of the History Tea Time podcast, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
The combat approves. Sukhoi's bureau, like, designer came on and he was like, "You see, we're doing the Russian tradition of making the best with what we have. So we've only stealthed the front half of our aircraft because that's what's going to be facing the enemy. It's the only part that needs to be stealth because that's what the radar is going to be looking at it." Like, oh yeah, cool. So what? There's a lot of issues with it, but basically there's stealthy features on the front, like the angles and such. It has a stealthy shape, right? Problems, number one, materials is a big problem, naturally.
Well, they've been missing a lot of it. They can't get access to a lot of stuff, which is why they've had to pull resources out of so many other industries to try and fix it.
Yeah, and construction issues as well. Even production model SU-57s have exposed rivets and paneling. So you can actually see the rivets connecting the panels to the aircraft in modern stealth aircraft. But there's one massive issue they have.
What is that?
And that is their current engines. Now, they're testing new engines right now. But when the Russians test a new engine, that means it's a decade away from production. Or if they rush it into production, it's going to catch fire, explode, and we're going to see like 15 SU-57s fall out.
I mean, you don't have a modern equivalent, I guess, of sawing off a propeller. So that's all you can do.
Well, in this case, they kind of do. Because what happened with the SU-57 was when they were building it, there's an issue they have. One of the biggest radar cross-section returns that you can get is the intake of an aircraft, right? Because you've got the fan blades inside spinning. And basically, when a radar hits the intake, it rattles around, the beam rattles around inside, rattles off the intake fans, and comes back. And so you have this massive RCS cross-section of the intake, right? And so you can see it clear as day. So the way that the F-22, the F-35, and other low observable aircraft, like the revamped, I'm pretty sure the later models of Gripen have started trying to work with this. They have what's called a serpentine intake. So what you have is you have the intakes of the engine sort of go around the side of the airframe and come back in and into the engine, right? So what you have is when the air goes into the intake, there's radar absorbent material, and the radar beam gets caught inside the intake and sort of disperses through the intake. so you don't get that return. Because the SU-57 is using the old engines from the SU-35, which is an upgraded version of the engines from the SU-37, which is the Saturn AM-31, I think. Don't quote me on that. Soviet engine designations are a pain. But they're the old engines from the SU-27 and the SU-35. And so the SU-57 has these fan blades in full view, like the intake, like there's just this massive, massive RCS on the front. And they tried to counter that. They put like sort of blockers in this sort of intake to try and fix the problem, but it hasn't really. And so to put it in perspective, the United States Air Force, when it's practicing against SU-57s, when they're training to simulate SU-57s, they use US Navy F-18s because the US Navy F-18 has a similar radar cross-section estimate to the SU-57. So the US uses fourth-generation fighters to simulate the SU-57 in exercises. But they brought the stealth fighter, the F-117, out of retirement to act as an aggressor for the Chinese stealth aircraft. So the Chinese are doing well. The Chinese are doing well. The J-20 Magnificent Dragon is shaping up to be...
I've covered a lot of the stuff that has happened with China, to be fair, because they're drastically improving. The big problem that they have is that there's generally no innovation because almost everything that they do is a copycat of something else that they steal the tech off of.
Yeah, because they're kind of doing what the Japanese did in the 19th century. It's a similar principle. It's they don't have the technology and industrial base needed to pursue high technology stuff. So they get the groundwork done from taking Western designs. And then from those copycats, they develop their own homegrown industry. China's actually doing rather well in shipbuilding.
They're doing well in shipbuilding because they got what? Three? Was it four aircraft carriers that are currently in the process of being built? But then I think from among terms of size, each one of them is almost like half the size of one of the aircraft carriers.
So the latest model of aircraft carrier that they're building is around two-thirds the size of a Gerald Ford class, but it has all the features that the Gerald Ford has. So it has like electromagnetic catapults, it has arresting gear, it has, you know, elevators, large hangar space, it has all the modern features that a US carrier does. Whereas previously the Chinese Navy has been dependent on the old Soviet ski jump designs, as is India at the moment. But China and India and other major Asian powers are building their own homegrown supercarriers or half-baked quasi supercarriers because no one has the money like the US does for their boats. Russia needs to take its aircraft carrier, the Kuznetsov. They need to take it outside and shoot it. They need to put it down like old Yeller, dude. They need to put this thing down, man. It is old and it's catching fire and it needs to stop.
Oh my god.
Oh, dude. That a friend of mine, History, he shares a name with your podcast, actually. His channel is called History of Everything.
No, you have no idea how freaking ironic this is. Can I tell you a story real quick when I looked at this?
So yeah, sure.
I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it's necessarily the same guy. Maybe it is. When I was creating the History of Everything podcast, right? I created the History of Everything podcast, and I had done so back in like 2021 is when I had done that. Yeah. Because the podcast is almost like, it's actually 2 years old here this month.
Yeah.
So I created that back in 2021 at the end of it. And when I had done this, I didn't create a YouTube channel for it until like 6 or 7 months later in the summer. And when I was going to do it, I was looking up, History of Everything, because I didn't see anything that was listed for that. And then I go and I look on YouTube and I discover History of Everything exists. And I look at it and go, what the fuck? This thing already exists. And I went and looked and there was no videos posted. I think it was like there was not a single thing that was posted. Just someone created the username for it. And I was like, well, shit, now what the hell am I going to do? Okay, well, I guess I just have to create it. I'm not the History of Everything YouTube channel. I'm the History of Everything podcast YouTube channel. And then lo and behold, I check on it like 6-7 months later, after I've already made my channel and started making stuff for it, now there's videos that are being posted to it. I'm like, are you kidding me? It wasn't silent. So that's it's the same guy.
Yeah, he's a mate of mine. He's from the east coast of Australia. He is a really good dude, and he has a whole video on the Kuznetsov. He has a series called The Russian Navy.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's popped up. And, do you have any idea how many people message me thinking that he is me? Or I guess I am him? It's created some confusion in here. I actually had to let my management team know from my history page because we got straight up confusements from advertisers that were looking us up and like, this isn't your channel. What are you talking about?
I should invite you to his Discord.
Oh my God.
I'll invite you. You can have a, you can sort this out the old way. Field of Honor. No, so we were talking about dumb things.
There was, I think I got two more in here. I'm not sure if you have any yourself, but I know off the top of my head, there was a case where back around, like when World War II was ending, you know how Brazil entered into the conflict real late? So they wrecked house in Italy, but they also accidentally wrecked house at home because they at one point destroyed one of their own ships in an accident. Oh, you have heard of this in here. Okay.
Tell the story.
Okay, so for those of you who are not aware, Brazil was a part of World War II, though they didn't do necessarily nearly as much. They really only participated when it came to stuff with Italy, but they went in pretty hard when it came to specifically attacking Italy. Don't really know why, but they did it. Either way, so there was a I think it was a cruiser or was it a destroyer? Pretty sure it was a cruiser.
I think it's a cruiser.
So it was a cruiser called the Bahia, and this was something that had been stationed in Brazil because they were trying to protect convoys because, you know, the Germans were convoy raiding all across the Atlantic here at this time. And they were practicing, like they were doing some drills against like anti-aircraft stuff, you know, like, you know, being able to shoot stuff out of the sky. And the way you can't really practice that without, you know, having a target that is in the sky. So you can use balloons, you can use kites, you can use dummy aircraft, these kinds of, but you're no one's going to want to use a dummy aircraft at this time because you could still get shot out of the sky. So they are practicing with another ship that is moving ahead of them using a kite, and that kite is up in the air, and the anti-aircraft guns are firing at it to try and hit it, you know, because it's a moving target, not really as fast as what an actual aircraft would do, but, you know, you got to take what it is that you can get.
Yeah, you take what you can get.
Over the course of this exercise, what happened is that one of the gunners on the Bahia accidentally went and shot a round that I don't know how the hell they were aiming up in the sky and managed to do this, but it managed to hit a container that had, not a container, but it managed to hit a depth charge on the other ship that was dragging the kite. Yep. But it wasn't just a single depth charge. The way that they had these stored was they were all like right next to each other rows. So it was the equivalent of hitting like the magazine and the
They blew the back half of the ship off. It just, they hit one depth charge, and depth charges are mounted in a rack that dispenses depth charges in patterns which are set by the bridge. They fired, and it hit the depth, and it caused a chain reaction. It blew the back half of the boat off. It just went,
just the ship had like 300 people on it, and only like a dozen or so survived, and that's it.
Yeah, it blew the whole ship up.
Guys, we are going to have to end things. I know it's a little bit of a quicker episode, especially since we got started a little bit later than I probably anticipated. But, you know,
you should invite me.
Oh, no, this would be a lot of fun here to do another one in the future. This is obviously going up on YouTube. This is going up on the like on podcasts, on like Spotify, Apple, everything else. I will leave you all here. Anamarki, do you want to go ahead and plug yourself one more time before we go ahead and let you go?
Absolutely. I am Anamarki History. You can find me on YouTube. I'm on TikTok occasionally, but you'll most likely see me lurking around. If you want to get angry at me, you can find me on Twitter, where I start fights with people and share my opinions.
Send me over your links to this, and honestly, I'll plug you in like the description with everything.
Yeah, just put my, let people find my Twitter on their own, because that's an adventure in of itself.
All right. Well, then, we're going to go ahead and let things go here. Everyone, thank you very much. I will see you all next time. Goodbye, my friends.
Bye, guys.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.